You're listening to CBC Radio 1, 91.5 in Ottawa.
Well, hello there, Ontario. I'm Alan Neal, and you are listening to Banjoed With. I know the show is normally called Bandwidth, but the moniker seems to need to change for today's program, which is focusing all on the banjo in Ontario. And the lady who you're hearing plucking away at that very banjo is going to be our co-host for today's program. That would be banjo expert Brianna Goldberg.
I'm really more of an expert at banjo history than banjo playing per se, so you'll have to excuse that delightful musical intro.
It sounded very good. How long have you been actually playing the banjo?
I got started on the whole banjo train about a year ago, I guess. I was reading an article in the Toronto Star about this banjo player named Jamie Stone,
right,
who had made his reputation on jazzy bluegrass tunes. And I was reading about him because at that point he was about to go to Africa to learn about the banjo's African history. And I became entranced. I got a CD, I rented a banjo from Steve's Music and started playing it incessantly, much to the dismay of my neighbors. And I just got pulled into this story of the African banjo, and fantastically, this story actually now seems to be relevant, because I've heard a ton of banjo out of Ontario musicians lately.
Right.
It's a banjo renaissance, or as I like to call it, a banjolution.
A banjolution.
That's
right. It's what we're talking about today on Bandwidth. Now, it's true, you do hear more and more banjo popping up in different Ontario bands. I noticed on the Bar Mitzvah Brothers' last album.
There's a shrine.
Right? The hipsters like the Bar Mitzvah Brothers have embraced it, but it's also been embraced by mainstream industry, like Feist with 1-2-3-4 that featured the banjo very happily.
1-2-3-4-5-6-9-10 Money can't buy you.
Now, I think some people might not have even noticed the banjo in Feist's music.
Oh, it's there.
Until this very moment of highlighting. That's the kind of important message we're going to get across today on Banjoed With. And speaking of people who use banjo in their music, if there are fans of the band Elliot Brood, people have been waiting and waiting and waiting for a brand new CD to come out. That CD is forthcoming, but we have the world premiere of a banjolicious track for Bandwidth listeners today on the show. So that's coming up a little bit later on today's program. So there's going to be plenty of different styles and ideas about the banjo, both its roots and its future, coming up on this very episode. But I think we should start with some banjo music, and we might as well start with the guy who got you interested in this in the first place, Jamie Stone, from his last CD, The Utmost. This is called Sister.
Thank you.
Nimble Fingers there of Jamie Stone, banjo player extraordinaire, with a tune called Sister from his last CD, The Utmost. And today, Bandwidth has been renamed Banjoedwidth, along with my co-host, Brianna Goldberg, who's with me in studio, still holding on to her banjo. I have to say, I am impressed for 1 year of playing Brianna Goldberg.
Why, thank you.
But I hear somebody like Jamie, I'm in absolute awe. The skill that's involved in plucking away at the banjo, it is a different art form than guitar, right?
Totally. I conceitedly thought the banjo would be quite easy for me to play since I had a history as a guitar player, but it's actually very different. I'll show you here. You know, on a guitar, there's six strings. The string closest to you is the lowest note. The string
right.
furthest away of you is the highest note. But the banjo, this is the string closest to me. It sounds like this, which is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next string closest to that, that's a low note. It is not like it goes high to low or low to high. It goes high, low, less low, like this.
So it's sort of counterintuitive.
You have to totally rethink it. I'm drawn to it as sort of an intellectual exercise, but I think that a lot of the banjolution is also being driven by the sound of the banjo. It has just a different bouncy, sort of fun, round sound to it.
That's normally the mood you associate with the banjo, and certainly some of the examples that we've heard so far. But the banjo can also have that lonely, almost mournful feel to it, right?
That's part of the banjolution, too. Someone who would agree with you is Ottawa singer-songwriter named Andrea Sims Karp. We're hearing her right now.
It's a long way to go, but I'm happy. If you got time to kill, you could get lost up in these streets until you...
I think Andrea and her banjo are sort of fighting over the somewhat noisy crowd at Elmdale Tavern here in Ottawa, part of a concert we recorded for Bandwidth and Canada Live in the future. How long has she been working with the banjo?
Well, Andrea has written songs for a long time. She was mostly working with voice and guitar, but all of her songs started to sound the same to her. And then she picked up the banjo.
It ended up being just exactly what I needed it to be, and that's just something that would let me write a different kind of song that I had been writing.
And one of those songs is Real Fine Friend that we're listening to. She said it was inspired by the sorrowful sound of her banjo, and that was strange. She's not normally inspired by sound. It was just totally the banjo that did it for her.
Let's hear just how sorrowful the banjo can get, then. This is from her CD, Sleeper, Andrea Sims Karp, and Real Fine Friend.
It's a long way to go without a map, but if you got time to kill, you could get lost up in these streets until you notice my light. Recognize my front porch and stay the night. No shame in giving in. No shame in giving up some time. No shame in our love. No shame in our love. It's a long way to run in the rain on a summer night. Feels like fall, feel nothing at all, but I'm trying hard. I know you'll pull in on a Greyhound bus and you'll steal my heart. There's no shame in giving in, no shame in giving up some time.
Here's sort of how the lonely plucking of the banjo leading to somebody feeling all alone in the rainstorm there. Andrea Sims Karp and a tune called Real Fine Friend from her CD Sleeper. And Brianna Goldberg is with us today on an episode of Bandwidth we're calling Banjoed With, talking about different people using the banjo in music. Now, it was interesting, Brianna, you were saying earlier that Andrea said she couldn't have written that song on guitar.
It's not something that she would have thought of on guitar, but it's actually not what most people would think comes from a banjo either, and that is what seems to be working in her favor at her live shows.
Sometimes being a bit unusual and being the freak girl with the banjo comes in handy, because then people will come listen, because they're wondering what on earth you're doing and why you're playing this old person's instrument, this perceived hillbilly instrument, which is funny because that's only one of many areas you can take this instrument.
And one of the areas she's taking it that I found really interesting was this 60s girl group-esque vibe of a song called Silvering, so I thought we could have a listen to that one.
All right.
If there's nothing good left here, I will go. Something in the air, poison in the snow. I could pack my room in an afternoon, or I could leave it all. Posters on the wall, discipline. Streets.
I like that a whole lot. Andrea Sims Karp and Silvering from her CD Sleeper. Kind of like, I guess, if you gave the Supremes or the Crystals or the Ronettes something banjo in the background, a little extra banjo behind them, and certainly a more playful sound to the banjo than the sorrowful tones we were talking about earlier, Brianna.
Andrea's use of the banjo is truly imaginative, and that's why she says she gets so frustrated when people expect her to play the stereotypical American hillbilly banjo music.
Right.
But, you know, the true story of the banjo actually goes deeper than that stereotype.
What do we mean by the true story?
Well, it involves slavery, it involves racism, and it's being explored by some Ontario musicians right now. But since none of the banjo's story is written down, it's hard to find a beginning. So let's just start in the past. Way, way in the past. Thousands of years ago in West Africa. That's the story of the banjo that's being told by Jamie Stone, who we heard from earlier. Since last April, Jamie's been learning about the first proto-banjos that came from Africa. Those thousands of years old banjos are called Ngonis, and the Ngonis are actually still played in Africa today.
It looks Ngoni.
Ngoni.
N-G-O-N-I.
N-G-O-N-I. The Ngoni looks a lot like a banjo, but its resonator, the big round hollow part, isn't a perfect circle. Instead, it's made of a gourd.
Gourd. Now, we're talking about the out of the earth, like a squash gourd?
Well, it's not edible like a squash. I wouldn't try to eat it, but yes, it comes from the ground. They're muddy. They tend to grow in very warm regions, such as Africa, but also the American South. And, you know, it doesn't sound too mystical when I call it mud-covered, but let me tell you how Jamie heard about the Ngonis from the African musicians.
Once upon a time, the banjo came from Africa. Okay, well, here's the truth, is you could keep saying once upon a time, because the stories that they tell about the Ngoni is that the first Ngoni was brought by a genie, and the genies had a different color skin than the Africans, and they had all these things that the Africans had never seen. And so one day, by the river, someone sees one of these genies sitting there playing the Ngoni, and they went up and he played it and put him in a trance. It's hard to say when it went where, but somehow it ended up going through West Africa. And possibly that's the closest instrument to the early banjos found in the New World.
I know this sounds like a bit of a tall tale.
I don't know. It's possible.
Sure. Genies, you know, banjos, they go hand in hand.
Although it's interesting to hear this legend being told about somebody with a different skin color coming along and claiming the music of somebody else.
We should maybe mention that Jamie isn't doing this because he's trying to reclaim black history. He, in fact, is pale-skinned, a slight pale-skinned fellow.
Uh-huh.
He's just a banjo player with a penchant for the experimental. And he's experimenting with the banjo's relationship to African gourd instruments like the Ngoni and the kora, the instrument you hear right now playing along with Jamie's regular banjo.
It's another gourd instrument.
Yes, the kora is like the Ngoni. It's made of a gourd like the Ngoni, but instead of having, you know, a couple strings, it has 21 strings. It's amazing to see people play these things. But Jamie started to learn the difference between the Ngoni and the kora when he spent some time in Mali in West Africa last year. He trekked through remote villages and learned the music of the Ngonis and the koras firsthand. This obviously could have been daunting. He was a white Canadian banjo player roaming remote African villages, did not speak the language. He only spoke banjo. But Jamie was prepared.
Whenever I would meet new people, I would pull out my banjo and play, you know, tunes of Ali Farka Touré's or somebody well known. You know, Ali Farka Touré is like the Bob Dylan over there. And so anybody would know all these songs, and people would end up singing and clapping along, and even though they didn't recognize my instrument, as soon as I would start playing, they wouldn't blink. It was like, oh yeah, this person knows how to play African music.
Jamie came back to Toronto with a mission. He took what he learned in Mali and teamed up with a man named Mansa Sissoko, who's playing that kora that you're hearing right now. Jamie and Mansa are recording an album of their African Fusion project. It's due out in July of this year, and they're also going to be hitting a ton of music festivals across Canada and the U.S. You could find out about that on Jamie Stone's website. But in the meantime, Jamie and Mansa have been kind enough to lend us a demo of their project. It's called BB.
Hey, baby, chigita, bibi chigita, bibi chigita, simu inuade, bibi wo, masa bibi lewo, kono kuku kulunde kudi, tonya simu nata.
Absolutely beautiful. Jamie Stone and Mansa Sissoko, who are teaming up for a brand new CD. That is a little bit of a world premiere for you here on an edition of Bandwidth we're calling Banjoed With, where we're taking a look at the banjo in Ontario. And my co-host today is Brianna Goldberg, who was just telling me, in fact, that they're only playing one chord through that entire song.
Yep, that's one chord. That's the difference between sort of bluegrass, ton of chord, ton of picking, and sort of the African influence, which is just very rhythmic sort of one chord progression. But you still feel like you're being carried through on sort of a storyline. It's very cool fusion.
We are learning all kinds of things about the banjo today.
What's that funny-looking guitar you're playing?
Oh, this isn't a guitar. This is a banjo.
Well, tell me, is the banjo something new?
New? About as new as America is. You see, American Negro slaves made the first real banjos a couple hundred years ago. Out of old hollow gourds and possum skins, I guess. But then the banjos spread all over the whole country. Everyone loved them. They traveled west in the covered wagons.
I should emphasize, that is neither myself or Brianna Goldberg speaking there. Brianna, who is that?
That's Pete Seeger picking up our banjo history in a documentary film from 1947 called To Hear Your Banjo Play. Now, Pete Seeger, of course, was a driving force of the American folk music revival in the 50s, and he drove it with a banjo on his knee, much like the one on my knee right now. But his version of the banjo story rushed past some key events that ours is not going to.
Key events?
We details like slavery, exploitation, appropriation, racism, all that stuff. But there's one banjo maker in Toronto right now who's ensuring those parts of the history aren't forgotten.
My name is Jeff Menzies, and I'm an artist and gourd banjo maker.
A gourd banjo maker.
Yes. Jeff makes banjos that look like the ones that come out of the minstrel period. That's from the 19th century when white people put on blackface makeup and were parodying black musicians like gourd banjo players. I should mention that, like Jamie, Jeff is white. And here is Jeff playing a tune on one of those gourd banjos that he made.
Jeff Menzies showcasing one of the gourd banjos that he not only plays, but he makes.
That's right. 3 days a week, he descends into his tiny, unfinished basement. There's nowhere to step. There's compost and shipping boxes and more than 100 muddy gourds littered all around him. And he makes the most beautiful, intricate instruments, the ones that bridge the gap between the African ngonis we heard about before and the American banjos like the one that I've got right here.
So how do you make a banjo out of a gourd?
Well, it all starts with the gourd.
This gourd here, which is, I don't know, maybe 22 inches in diameter. This is grown in Ontario.
And that's how a gourd banjo begins. Jeff picks it up off the floor, gives it a knock. If it sounds good, it's ready to go.
I think what people making their way through the supermarket, always figuring out exactly the right way to get a melon. You got a good gourd there.
Yes, and then not so easy as just having a nice melon for a snack. Rather, it's days upon days of sawing, drilling, and sanding, and then the animals come in.
The animals?
Yes, the animals. He stretches goat skin across the hole in the gourd, for example, to give it that lovely resonating sort of skin sound. And then the cows come in for the part of the banjo that holds down the strings.
Oh,
I use cow bones, soup bones, which all my friends collect for me. So if anyone wants to donate cow bones to me, I'll give you my address.
And even though his gourd banjo tour was relatively thorough when I was there, this part remained a mystery for me. Thankfully, I asked him about one machine I saw in the corner of his workshop, and this is what he said.
That's a power sander. That's what I use for making my bone tail pieces, which I won't demonstrate now because you'll run out of here.
Smelly? What is it just?
It's disgusting. The smell, if you smell burnt hair or anything like that, it's that times a few.
How do you put up with it?
I wear a mask, but even sometimes through the mask, you can still taste it.
And yet, the barnyard connections continue.
Fantastic.
From goat skin to cow bones to the material gourd banjo makers used for strings.
Guts from cats, intestine, that's basically twisted and twisted and twisted and twisted and twisted and stretched until you get this really fine cord. That's not used today for obvious reasons. They use sheep. I use gut quite a bit. The tonal qualities of it, you just can't beat.
These are the things I don't think about when I see banjo players playing cat gut and sheep gut. I don't know if that sheep gut's much better, really.
No, I don't really get the animal treatment benefit there, but you can really hear, this is Jeff right now playing one of his gourd banjos, and you can hear that tonal quality that he was talking about. It just sounds deeper and rounder and earthier than the steel string banjos that were being played by Jamie or Andrea Sims Karp. Let's have a listen.
Well, it sounds great, but at the same time, the process does sound a little repulsive. Brianna, why does he do it?
Well, on one level, Jeff does it because he loves the art of it. He's also a sculptor, and that's how he came across the gourd banjo in the first place. He had been working with gourds in his art. He was metal casting them and stretching them, and he liked the gourd as a metaphor. But it also goes back to that desire that Jamie has to reach further into the banjo's history.
And is it mostly historians, history buffs that buy these things?
Well, some history buffs do. A lot of Civil War reenactors are into the gourd banjo thing because it's accurate to their period. But also art collectors and, you know, just musicians like Shishim and Lotus, the Kingston musicians that play old-time music on gourd banjos.
I just had a chance to see them. These guys, for anybody who has not seen them, usually in full-fledged, the fedora, the suspenders, the gramophone is out there and playing intense old-time music while step dancing, right?
That's right. Let's listen to a song of theirs called Old Billy Hell.
Shishim and Lotus from Kingston, a little tune called Old Billy Hell. And according to their CD, Brianna Goldberg, my co-host today on a program that we're calling Banjoed With as we look at the banjo, the Shishim and Lotus CD calls it old-time, ragtime, mountain-high steppin' music. And certainly they make reference to it being Americana. It's often not seen as maybe being Canadiana.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Jeff says that not many Canadians buy his gourd banjos. Way more Americans do. And his theory on that is there's no pop culture of the banjo here in Canada.
We don't have the equivalent of the hillbilly stereotype plucking away on the banjo.
A little bit. There are hints of it here and there. Take Jenny Whiteley's song Banjo Girl, for example. Now, that is a uniquely Canadian, all Canadian written, recorded, and produced story about the banjo, banjo identity, Banjo Girl. Incidentally, my personal theme song.
Really?
Absolutely.
All right, well then I think we should play a little bit. Here is Jenny Whiteley off of her CD Deer and Banjo Girl.
Banjo girl,
stole my heart.
Banjo.
smile when you hear that song, Banjo Girl, the theme song of today's co-host of this special edition called Banjoed With, Brianna Goldberg. And Jenny Whiteley's tune, Banjo Girl, comes off of her CD, Dear. I should mention that Jenny's got dates in Almont, Wakefield, McDonald's Corners, Grafton, and Waterloo, all coming up really shortly. Some of them actually featuring Shisham and Lotus opening up for her as well. You can find out all the concert details if you go to cbc.ca/bandwidth and click on links. And as I mentioned, it brought a smile to the face of my co-host Brianna Goldberg,
who's certainly,
actually, even though she sings about a banjo girl in that song, Jenny's not the one playing the banjo.
No, Jenny's not playing the banjo. It was actually a fellow called Chris Cool, who some of you may know as a member of the legendary band the Foggy Hogtown Boys. This is them now.
Now I hear that, Brianna, and I guess it could be considered more typical of the sounds that you expect to hear out of a banjo.
Definitely, and that's why this wouldn't be banjoed with if we didn't hear from the Foggy Hogtown Boys. Not only because they represent sort of the dominant form of banjo music, but also because they're insanely popular with the old-time and bluegrass crowd in Toronto. But I asked Chris Cool what he thought about all this stuff that Jamie and Jeff are doing, the reaching back into the African roots of the banjo. He told me the Foggy Hogtown Boys are quite aware of the African history. They just don't get too wrapped up in it.
Where it came from is cool, but where it is and where it's going is at least equally important and perhaps a bit more valid in my mind. That's sort of what I tend to focus on more.
So let's have a listen to the kind of thing the Foggy Hogtown Boys are focusing on.
Hogtown Boys picking away in the pumpkin patch there from their CD Pigtown Fling. Today on Banjoed With, I'm Alan Neal with my co-host Brianna Goldberg here in Ottawa. Now, right before we heard that song, Chris Cool was mentioning he was really focused on where the music is going.
Yeah, he said he wasn't too caught up in the African roots because he wanted to focus on the future of the banjo, but to me, what Jamie and Jeff are doing actually is moving into the future. It's just reaching into the past and throwing it into the future. Hmm. But this brings me back to my theory of the banjolution in indie music.
Don't laugh.
It's very real.
I believe you.
It's impending. It's where indie bands are taking the banjo and they're playing it in totally new ways. They're, you know, shedding the sort of cultural implications, the hillbilly stereotype, and they're using it for the sound. They're pushing us into a bright new banjo future.
Including, I understand, the electric banjo.
Yes, there is such a thing. You plug it into an amplifier, you can add distortion, it's all crazy and edgy, man. And that is what the Bar Mitzvah brothers use in their music. They use a electrified banjo, and you can hear it on their tune, Projectionist.
Takes his cue. Seven times is all for you. It's a star. The price is paid. Two for one. good choice is made. Gonna pick a back row seat.
You're hearing a little electric banjo there, courtesy of Jordy of the band The Bar Mitzvah Brothers, proud Guelph residents, and a tune called Projectionist, which is off of their CD, Let's Express Our Motives. 19 songs all about underappreciated occupations, much like, I suppose, the banjo player could be.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Not after today. Not after today on Banjoed with my wonderful co-host, Brianna Goldberg. And Brianna, in that song, the banjo's up front. No trouble picking it out, even for a I was trying to try and put banjo and virgin together in banjurgen, but I don't think that works as well.
Somehow it sounds dirty.
A banjo novice like myself,
right,
could even pick out where the banjo was there. But are there examples of where the banjo is being used in more subtle ways?
Yes. Once you tune your ears to the banjolution, you'll start hearing it everywhere. Sometimes it's obvious, but you'll start picking out in places like we mentioned earlier with Feist's 1-2-3-4.
Right.
And also in songs like Craig Cardiff's When People Go. Now, this is a song about death, but he uses just a little ever so slight banjo just to happyify it a tiny bit. Here it is now.
Good night and go home. And there is nothing more to see, just a song and a box. There's no need to cry. Please find a friend, have a drink and go home. Dig a tube into your heart. Go to bed and go to bed and
Cardiff and the song When People Go. I think I could pick out the banjo there, ever so subtly playing in the background.
Good, you have learned today,
you
Alan.
Have you trained have me well, Brianna Goldberg. I shall start hearing banjos everywhere. Now, I'm particularly excited about what's coming up next. This is a world premiere that we've got today on Banjoed With. Elliot Brood, the band out of Windsor, that have been, well, I guess I shouldn't say taking their time, but have been several years in the making of the follow-up to their CD, Ambassador, finally have it done. And it's called Mountain Meadows. It's supposed to be coming out in the summer of 2008. But when they heard that Banjoed With was airing, they felt it was time for one track to come to light.
That's kind of nice.
It's very nice. And so they've sent it to us for a world premiere here, and neither of us have even heard it yet. We are sitting here in the studio.
Edge of my seat, banjo clasped between my hands.
To hear how will they use banjo in this number in particular. Mark Sasso, I remember telling me, he discovered this banjo in particular, picked it up, and didn't really have any formal training, and actually plays it like a guitar.
No, that's definitely a trend of the Banjolution, people just taking it and rolling with it. So maybe let's hear the Banjolution continue.
All right, here is Elliot Brood, world premiere of Without Again. So great to hear them back in the studio again. Elliot Brood out of Windsor, and a world premiere of a song called Without Again from their upcoming CD. You can look for it in the summer of 2008, Mountain Meadows. But we got a sneak peek or a sneak here at the song Without Again on the special banjo-oriented episode of Bandwidth called Banjoed with my co-host Brianna Goldberg. And I think that was a pretty fine use of the banjo, wouldn't you say, banjo expert Brianna Goldberg?
Seriously, I loved it, yeah.
You have exposed me to so much fantastic banjo music today, and I think widened minds for a lot of people about what the banjo can actually do. What is next for banjo expert Brianna Goldberg?
You know, try to get better at banjo so I don't embarrass myself playing it again on regional radio.
I don't
subject you to that ever again.
Well, you don't actually get off the hook that easily, Brianna, because I'd love it if you could play the banjo for us one more time as our end credit music.
Love to. One more time.
Banjoed with. Take it away. That is band journalist Brianna Goldberg playing us out of this right now. But we want to thank Shane Bryanton, who recorded the Andrea Sims Carp concert at the Elmdale Tavern, as well the Canada Live folks for getting us the music of the Jamie Stone Mansa Sissoko concert at the Lula Lounge, and Jennifer Shrimpy Taylor for logging this show, as always. If you want to find out more about any of the artists, cbc.ca/bandwidth, and you can contact us at bandwidth@cbc.ca. I'm Alan Neal.
And I'm Brianna Goldberg.
And we will talk to you next time when we drop the Joe from Banjoed With.